Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello and welcome to this La Liga Lowdown Matchday Recap, hosted by me, Ewan McTeer, and rebroadcast on SiriusXM FC 157. We've just seen the 26th matchday of the La Liga season, and this was the matchday of the second Clásico of the season. We'll be getting stuck into that first up, while later in the podcast, we'll also hear about the Copa del Rey semi-finalists, Granada, Athletic Club, and Real Sociedad. We'll see how they got on with Heath Chester's and Dan Parry. We'll also find out what's going on at Valencia via Paco Pollitt. And coming up, straight from Son Moix.
I'm Alex Fitzpatrick, and in part two of today's podcast, I'll be discussing Getafe's win over Mallorca.
But first, let's get things kicked off by discussing the biggest match in world football, El Clásico. It was Real Madrid against Barcelona at the Bernabeu on Sunday night, and Real Madrid won 2-0 to move back to the top of the table, leapfrogging Barcelona, who they trailed by 2 points and who they now lead by one. This was a tactically fascinating game. I would describe the start of it as being like a basketball game. It was like one team would launch an attack, work their way up the field, move the ball around just outside the opposition area, and then try to score. And then the other team would launch their attack, work their way all the way up the field to the opposition area. The ball just never seemed to be lost or stolen in midfield. Both Real Madrid and Barcelona seemed to be able to complete each attack all the way to the point where they attempted a shot or a cross. This, though, was only up until the first goal, which came through Vinicius Jr. So Vinicius opened the scoring, helped by a Gerard Piqué deflection. He really is an expert at scoring goals that fly in off defenders. That's about 4 goals now for Real Madrid where that's been the case. But after Vinicius opened the scoring, Real Madrid started to turn the screw and dominate a little. And then in stoppage time, when Barcelona were seeking an equaliser, it was actually Real Madrid who got a second.
Que bien Mariano, cómo se va Mariano, se la pide Vini, Mariano chuta, gol, gol,
gol de Mariano,
de Mariano,
y gol, 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 gol.
So Real Madrid win this Clásico 2-0, and I'm thrilled to be joined now by La Liga Lowdown's Barcelona expert Roman de Arquer to break this one down. First question, Roman, was 2-0 a fair result?
After the first half, I honestly thought that Barcelona were at least deserving at that point of the game, but the second half was like completely different because Madrid were all over Barcelona and definitely they were deserving to win. And I mean, maybe 1-0 I think would have been a fair result, but there's not really much difference between 1 or 2 goals, to be honest. So in the end, it was Madrid deserving to win, and that's what happened. So I think it was fair one way or another.
I agree with you there that Barcelona were better in the first half. Then Real Madrid were better in the second half. What did you think of the flow of the game?
I mostly agree with your assessment here. I think Barcelona were better in the first half, although the first maybe 10, 15, 20 minutes, both teams were quite timid. We could say they weren't really going forward. They were trying to find their pace. They were trying to situate themselves on the field. But then from there on, Barca definitely had control of that first half. They had really good chances, which I think should have ended in goal. I mean, that could have changed the game, especially in that second half. But it wasn't the case, and Madrid came out really strong in that second half. Physically, they maintained the rhythm. They even kept pushing and pressing Barcelona up high near their box, and that's where they Barca really struggled and weren't capable of finding passes, even though Setien made a few changes, in my opinion, slightly late. That still didn't give any effect except for that really good Braithwaite occasion. So, I mean, credit to Madrid for keeping up that level and playing that well in that second half.
And one of the players who played so well was Vinicius, who scored the opener for Real Madrid and who was great throughout, right?
Indeed, I mean, he's proving to be a fantastic player for Real Madrid. We saw it against Manchester City, even though they lost the game. Vinicius was definitely one of the standout players of that match. And once again, against another strong team, he proved he's got a lot of quality, a lot of talent. He can do a lot of damage down that left wing. And in the end, he got a deserved goal. I mean, we've always talked about how he's very unfortunate towards goal, how he misses very clear opportunities. But he got that deserved goal, and I mean, he was definitely one of Madrid's standout players, no doubt.
Who else from Real Madrid stood out to you in this game?
I've heard a lot of people talk about Casemiro's good game, Fede Valverde, Toni Kroos, but I want to point out Isco. I think he was really good in this game. I mean, Zidane's giving him a lot of trust, and he's repaying that trust with good games against City, against Barcelona, and he was generating a lot in attack, had some really good chances, especially that shot from outside the box, which Ter Stegen saved majestically. So I think he was a very good player, and he's doing a good job lately. And also, of course, we have to point out Thibaut Courtois, who was fantastic. He made some really, really important saves, and he's gained so much confidence with the ball in his feet. I remember a few years back at Chelsea, even at Madrid, his first year, he didn't really, you know, have that confidence in himself when the ball was played to his feet and would usually get rid of it. But now, you know, he's taking his time, he's finding those passes, and Madrid are bringing the ball out from the back thanks to Thibaut Courtois in part. So great game from him also.
Isco is a good shout there, a bit of a below-the-radar masterclass from him. Now, what did you think about Marcelo? I thought Barcelona could exploit him on the left side when I saw that he was starting ahead of Fernandes, but that wasn't actually the case.
Marcelo is always a liability, especially defensively. I do agree that Barca could have made more out of that situation. Taking into account Mendy wasn't playing, and I think he's a much more complete player nowadays, of course, because I mean, Marcelo has an age and he's not at his best physically, and he's never been a great, great defender, it has to be said. So I was really hoping for a 4-3-3 with maybe Ansu Fati or Braithwaite, one of those wings, trying to make the most of the spaces Marcelo would leave at the back when attacking forward. But unfortunately, Setien went with a 4-4-2, which I think wasn't too bad in the end, especially that first half. But I thought he's played better games, or at least Quique Setien's Barca has played better games with a 4-3-3 so far this season. But unfortunately, they didn't make the most of Marcelo, even though he had some good moments, especially when he cut that messy opportunity in the second half, which looked like a clear goal, but he came, you know, from behind, kept the pressure, and managed to touch the ball enough to get it away from Lionel Messi.
Now, what about Barcelona players? Did anyone really stand out for good or for bad?
I'm going to start with the positives. I think Pique was definitely one of the best players in this game, which is surprising because he's had a very irregular season, we could say. But, you know, against Madrid at the Bernabeu, he always steps up his game, and he was fantastic, I think. Very unfortunate with the goal in the end. He tried his best to cut Vinicius' shot, but got deflected in goal. Also, I really like Busquets' game. He's also stepped up his game with Quique Setién. I think he's really important for him, and I think once again he proved he was crucial bringing the ball out from the back and trying to get Barcelona to move forward towards attack. And maybe I could even say Semedo, despite being quite unfortunate in Vinicius' goal where he chases Benzema, leaves the space behind, although he knows Braithwaite is there, but you can't really trust that, so it was a bit of a risky move. Apart from that, I thought he did quite well with Vinicius, taking into account Vinicius is a very complicated player to defend. He took the ball off him in quite a few occasions, and I think defensively he was quite solid. Unfortunately, in attack he didn't have as much presence as I would have liked. And maybe the negative aspect I have to point out, Arturo Vidal in that second half, suddenly he was just so imprecise with the ball on his feet. He was making lots of mistakes, and that was providing Madrid with a lot of counter-attacks. So I think Setien there should have taken him off the pitch quite sooner, but unfortunately it took a bit too long, and you know, things didn't work out in the end for Barcelona.
You've touched on Kiki Setién's tactics already, so let's look into this a bit more. This was Setién's first Clásico, and he actually has a good record at the Bernabéu with the other teams he's coached, but he couldn't come up with a plan to win this game. Where did he go wrong?
Firstly, I got the feeling that Quique Setién was more worried about defending Barça's position in the standings in La Liga rather than wanting to win at the Bernabéu, you know, and increasing that point difference they had. Why do I say this? Well, at the press conference, for example, before the game, Quique Setién was already trying to shift the pressure towards Real Madrid by saying that they were more desperate to get the 3 points than Barcelona because they were behind in the standings. But I just don't think that was the right approach, because let's not forget that Barca has been the better side at the Bernabéu in recent years, which is something you have to make the most of, I think. And also, he put a 4-4-2 formation, which kind of also gives him more of a defensive version of Barcelona than if you play a 4-3-3, which I think would have been a better decision. Because take into account that Real Madrid is a team that likes to attack a lot. They have two fullbacks such as Carvajal and Marcelo who like to go forward. If you have guys like Ansu Fati or Braithwaite who can make the most of those spaces left behind by those attacking fullbacks from Real Madrid, then it could have done a lot of damage. And that also creates or forces the defense to split up, to also to creating more spaces in the middle. And I think Barca would have done a lot more damage that way. And another mistake, we could say, from that 4-4-2 was the fact that Setién already had four midfielders on the pitch. So what does that mean? Only Rakitic was on the bench, and with his actual current form, he isn't a good alternative to have to bring on to try and change the game. And as we saw, he didn't really give too much to that game for Barcelona, apart from a bit more possession. So I just think in terms of formation and in terms of approach, Quique Setién didn't get it exactly right.
Thanks, Roman. So that's our Clásico recap. It was a true thriller and one which really could define the title. We'll have to wait to see if this does spur Real Madrid onto their first title in 3 years, or if Barcelona can fight back. Remember, they're just 1 point behind. And of course, we'll be keeping you up to date on all of the title race right here on La Liga Lowdown with our various podcasts and all our content on our Twitter feed. This is everything we've got for part one, but stay tuned because after the break, we have so many other matches to get stuck into. We'll do that after this short pause.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello and welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. We've already discussed El Clásico. Now, let's look at some of the other big matches of the weekend, starting with Valencia versus Real Betis. This is often a classic, and it was an entertaining watch once again as Valencia won 2-1 with second half goals from Kevin Gameiro and Dani Parejo before Lauren Marón pulled one back in vain for the visitors. Paco Pollitt joins me now, and Paco, I thought it was actually Real Betis who were the better team in the first half, but then Valencia improved in the second half when Gonzalo Guedes came on. What was it that Guedes brought to the table?
Getting Guedes on the pitch was crucial towards Valencia openly asking for a two-way game with permanent attacks on both boxes, and that's where Guedes is usually at his best. The spaces he generated were key for Gamedo to find a tiny window and score an absolute rocket of a goal. Since that point onward, Valencia were in control of the game.
Once again, Real Betis had so much possession, but they couldn't make it count. What is their problem this season?
I believe their problem lies in the way they're unable to get the opposition to play the way they want. Instead, Betis usually deliver unreliable performances, showing their inability to keep consistent the whole 90 minutes with both ball possession and chances while keeping at bay the other team. The result is usually negative for them, as they lose control of the game and are easily dismantled at the back, where their main weakness lies. Valencia's second half did exactly that because of the quality of their players. Once Parejo and Condogbia got the steering wheel of the game, it was lights out for Betis.
Valencia goalkeeper Jasper Cillessen played again after 84 days. How did he look?
I think he did look pretty solid overall. He had a great save after that Joaquin free kick I mentioned earlier and looked consistent and confident throughout the game. He only made one tiny mistake after a cross, which he absolutely missed when trying to clear the air ball. But if we leave that aside, his comeback was everything the team and the keeper could have asked for.
Thanks, Paco. That was a big result for Valencia to keep their Champions League hopes alive. But currently, in the Champions League qualification spots, we have Getafe and Sevilla. Sevilla moved into fourth in dramatic fashion as they hosted Osasuna on Sunday. They seem to be cruising after goals from Youssef En-Nesyri and Lucas Ocampos, and after Osasuna goalkeeper Sergio Herrera was sent off for a handball outside of the box. But then Sevilla relaxed too much, something that's been a problem a lot this season, and then Osasuna got back into it. Aridane Hernandez with one goal, and then Roberto Torres from the penalty spot, after Sevilla were this time punished for handball. But Osasuna, they couldn't stick the landing. There were 8 minutes of injury time, enough time for En-Nesyri to score again and earn a 3-2 win for Sevilla. Getafe, meanwhile, they're still in third in that other Champions League spot after a very impressive result in midweek when they knocked out Ajax out of the Europa League. This time they were off to Mallorca. Here's Alex Fitzpatrick now with a report from the island.
I'm Alex Fitzpatrick at Sunmosh, where Getafe have just beaten Real Mallorca by 1-0. The winning goal was a Maksimovic header from a Kennedy cross on the left. He found him unmarked in the middle of the box and he powered it home. Mata almost got the second. A couple of good saves from Manolo Reyna in the second half of the game. But really the controversy here is, and you'll be able to hear it in a moment as the referee walks off the pitch, is around how the home crowd perceives that this game has been refereed. Getafe are going to Getafe, and that is exactly what they did today. Let's first talk about the football side of things. They pressed really high. They made it really difficult for Mallorca to play any football, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. That's good play on the pitch and good management from Jose Bordalas. Mallorca having to resort to play it long. No Ante Budimir because of injury today, and they didn't really have a focal target man up there. So the football side, you know, Getafe did that well. But then, as I say, Getafe. Once they got that goal ahead, they started to waste time, and the referee really not taking any decisive action to stop them from doing that until the very closing stages of the match. The frustration on the Mallorca bench boiling over, Salva Sevilla picking up two yellow cards from the bench, making red, and being sent off whilst on the bench. He will miss next week's crucial game against Eibar away from home. Really important for Mallorca, and that will be particularly disappointing for them. Overall for Mallorca, though, they can't be too disappointed with the result. Not creating really any clear-cut opportunities on goal. Lots of frustration here at Sommosh. Getafe have done what they are good at. They've come here, they've picked up another 3 points away from home, the third best away side in La Liga before today. Real Mallorca come away with nothing, looking to be in real trouble now. Final score at Sommosh, Real Mallorca 0, Getafe 1.
Let's discuss some of the other matches around the league now. On Saturday, I went to watch Leganés versus Alavés, a fixture I remember watching in the second division just 4 years ago when Alavés coach Asier Garitano was then Leganés coach, and when both teams, they were marching towards promotion that season. Leganés are now in real danger of slipping back into that division. They lost their main forward when Martin Brathwaite left for Barcelona, and this was so clear in this game. After falling behind to Lucas Perez's goal, Guido Carrillo pulled Leganés back level, but Leganés then dominated so much in the final stages that they should have scored a winner. They just lacked a goal scorer to provide it for them. Now, speaking of goal scorers, are there any as important as Raúl de Tomás right now? The Espanyol January signing didn't technically score this weekend as it went down as a Stefan Savic own goal in Espanyol's 1-1 draw with Atletico Madrid, but he did create the goal after also netting in each of his first five appearances for the club. He was back from injury and helped his team earn a huge point against Atleti, who were saved by a Saúl rocket. He only scores wonder goals or important goals, doesn't he?
Raúl García to take the penalty, and he slots it home. 1-0 to Athletic. From the penalty spot is Raúl García.
That was the sound of Raúl García firing Athletic Club towards a 1-0 victory over Villarreal on Sunday, ending a 10-match winless run for Athletic in the league. They played quite well, but they did need a helping hand, literally, as they were awarded two penalties for handballs. We speak to Dan Parry now, our man in the Basque Country. Dan, what did you make of the handballs that led to the penalties, one which Raúl García scored and one which Iñaki Williams had saved?
To be honest, yeah, I think we're a bit fortunate. I find the handball rule at the moment quite confusing and quite inconsistent. I'm glad it was given because at the end of the day, Athletic needed that first penalty, especially to get in front and to win the game. But to be honest, if it had been in the other area, I'm not too sure I would have been very happy about it, because I don't know what the player could have done to get out of the way, to be quite honest. With the second one, I think it was a bit more favourable towards Atleti because he was, for me, in a more unnatural position. But the first one, the one that came off, that was a shot from Iñaki Williams, I don't really know what else the defender could have done there.
I agree. The handball rule is quite frustrating. And I agree, I don't think the first penalty was a penalty, but the second one probably was. Now, there were 22 Spanish players in this match's starting lineups. That hasn't happened in La Liga for 6 years, since Eibar versus Real Sociedad in 2014. It's quite special, right? And which of these players, if any, would have stood out to Luis Enrique for a potential Spain selection?
That is quite cool. I didn't know that, to be honest. I think also it's quite telling that that the last one did happen up in the Basque Country as well, because to be honest, it's something that we're quite used to up here, especially with Athletic and La Real, the teams that like to play with players from their own cantera. So seeing an entire squad or an entire team that are from the region is completely normal for us. In terms of players that stood out for a potential Spain selection, the obvious one, the one that lots of people are talking about, is Unai Simón, who's having an absolutely fantastic season in goal for Athletic Club at the moment. Again, he made an incredible save. If you haven't seen it yet, go look back at the save that he made against Gerard Moreno early on. I think it was in like the 7th minute of the game, because there was no way he should have saved that goal. And to be honest, the other player that stood out, apart from like an Athletic Club player, was Sergio Asenjo for Villarreal, because he also made some fantastic saves. He made some great double saves. I think he made a double save. He saved Iñaki Williams' penalty, and then he saved the shot that came afterwards from Raúl García. But also the save that he made against Íñigo Martínez was incredible. That definitely should have been a goal and should have settled the game for Athletic. So yeah, Sergio Asenjo and Unai Simón, it was kind of a tale of two goalkeepers.
Looking ahead now to Athletic Club's Copa del Rey semi-final second leg against Granada after they won the first leg 1-0. What's the mood like right now around Athletic Club ahead of that second leg?
I would say that people are optimistic, but at the same time, they don't want to get too ahead of themselves. I think that they realise that Granada are definitely a very complicated team, and it's not going to be any easy feat to go down to Los Cármenes and win the game. But it does also feel like this is Athletic Club's year. This might be the best chance that they have for an entire generation to actually go and win the Copa again. But like I said, at the same time, no one's getting ahead of themselves just yet. Well, apart from some people, obviously. I know people have already booked tickets to Sevilla, to be honest, but most people are staying in the moment.
Real Sociedad also have a semi-final second leg coming up. They got a 1-0 win over Valladolid on Friday night to warm up for it. I'll ask the same question. What is the mood like around Real Sociedad right now ahead of their second leg against Mirandes after they won their first game 2-1?
As for Real Sociedad, I think it's much of the same. People are optimistic, people are hopeful. Just like Athletic Club, they know that this probably is their best chance to reach a final and will be their best chance to reach a final for many years to come. But they're also fully aware of what Mirandes have done to get to the semi-finals, and I don't think that they're taking this game lightly at all. And I think as well they'll be in for a very tough test in Anduba. But same with Athletic Club. Like I said before, everyone is fully aware that this is the best chance that they're going to have to get some silverware, perhaps for another 20 or 30 years.
Let's hear now from Heath Chesters in Granada ahead of their participation in the Copa del Rey semi-finals. Granada played on Saturday night and drew 0-0 with Celta Vigo. But Heath, after a quiet first half, there were actually quite a lot of chances in the second half of this one. How did it end up finishing without any goals?
Yeah, it was one of those games where you wonder how nothing ended up in the back of the net, because it wasn't for lack of chances throughout the game. Vadil really should have buried a good chance that he had in the first half. Then in the second half, Granada were pushing forward more and more whilst they were nullifying Celta Vigo at the other end. There was a good shout for a handball late in the second half, and then Puertas, after he came on, brilliant opportunity, great header against one post, whizzed across the line, out off the other post. So yeah, I think it just ended up being one of those games where the ball just didn't want to go in the back of the net.
Granada have been using a new tactical formation in recent weeks with three centre-backs. How has that looked and how did it work in this game?
Well, it's actually not that new a system for Diego Martinez. He quite often played with three centre-backs in Segunda last season. And I think he would have liked to have used it a little bit more this season in Primera had he had everyone available when he needed them. Just simply a case of not having three available centre-backs to use the system more often due to injuries or suspensions from the available central defenders. But it's a system that I think he likes to use when he's facing a side that play with three in attack, such as Celta Vigo. And it works pretty well. It keeps the goals down, and it pretty much nullified Aspas, Smolov and Sisto throughout the game.
Finally, what is the mood like around Granada right now ahead of the Copa del Rey semi-final second leg against Athletic Club?
The Granada fans are thoroughly enjoying themselves. It's not often Granada in the top half of the table or look likely to finish in the top half of the table. It's certainly not often that Granada make the semi-finals of a cup competition. So, you know, they're really going to town with it. There's flags going up throughout the city, throughout the barrios and all the neighbourhoods, in all the windows, on all the roundabouts. There's Avenida Europa, which is near, not far from the ground, leading up to one of the shopping centres. That's all, the whole street is lined with flags, and there's a few other streets like that around the city. So everybody's looking forward to it. And the impression that you get from a lot of fans, obviously, we hope that Granada win and can get to the final at La Cartuja, whoever they get to play. But it's just going to be a party atmosphere for that second leg. There'll be disappointment if they don't get through against Athletic Club, but they're really fired up for it. The team's fired up for it. The manager's fired up for it. All the fans are fired up for it. They just want to enjoy themselves. And it gives sort of the impression that they've got nothing to lose. They weren't expected to get that far. They weren't expected to get to the final. There's been a lot of talk from Athletic Club fans and in Bilbao and the press, national and local, up that way, that they're expecting to get through. They're expecting a final against La Real. They're expecting an All-Basque final. I wouldn't bank on it just yet, because I think Granada will give themselves a good shout to make the final. Hopefully they'll get through. It'd be fantastic for me as an experience, simply having started watching Granada on dirt pitches into Serie Division 15 odd years ago, and to enjoy the adventure that I have with them. But you know, either way, it's been a season for Granada fans to be proud of.
We have just one more game to reflect on from this weekend, and it's Eibar's 3-0 victory over Levante on Saturday. After Levante defeated Real Madrid the previous weekend, they were brought crashing back down to earth in Ipurua as Eibar won convincingly. Charles got the first two and could even have had a hat-trick, but he missed a penalty. Not to worry though for Eibar, as Fabian Orellana was on hand to add a third and to cap off a big win for them. That's all we have for this matchday recap. Remember, we're here after every round to sum up and analyse the matches by speaking to people who are based all around Spain and who are absolute experts in their local clubs. That's what we had this week from Roman de Arquer, Paco Pollitt, Alex Fitzpatrick, Dan Parry and Heath Chesters. So my thanks go out to all of them for their contributions. I'm Ewan McTeer and I've been your host, and I thank you very much for listening. Until next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.